Because you've been known as an activist in a lot of circles. Even that you even went up to the actual council, and when they had their own board, their own little council meeting, and told them off, like, y'all screwing up.
I mean, activist is a word that I've heard people use for me. It's not something that I like to put on myself. You know what I mean? I'm vocal. I'm a poet. I'm a human. I'm a spirit having a very human experience here. You know, I think there's a lot of expectation that comes when you say I'm an activist. I get hella active for my community. I love my community. Let that not go without saying. And I show up for my community. You have seen me on the front lines. You have seen me out here because I love these kids, because I love the community out here. So, you know, I'm not an activist. I'm a human being human and just trying to show up and trying to show up in love. You know, I think, activist carries a lot of connotations nowadays.
There's a loaded question. Yeah.
what is an activist? What constitutes activism? You know, how are you active? I think a lot of activism, as it's the connotation of activism, is this very reactionary thing where it's like, oh, we've got all of this going on. We need the activists to react. It's reactivism, right? And that's where I really try and stray away from that reacting to things, where it's just like, yo, like we just move in love all the time. And that's the activism. That's how I stay active, is I actively pursue love. I actively pursue joy. I actively work to focus on the beautiful things in my community and make more of them happen. You know, I'm not convinced that a lot of waving signs and protesting has made a whole lot of difference. But I think there are some brilliant young people who have some incredible ideas and who've been doing some amazing work. So, you know.
I believe that. I mean, so I do remember you had a podcast before when you were with Soul Media.
I did.
What was the podcast called?
Podcast was called the Not So Underground Podcast. we did, it was basically me talking to a lot of folks friends that I know in the industry that have kind of gotten to a higher level, right? That have surpassed like the start out level. And it was a podcast more aimed at like beginning artists, to kind of give them the tips and the tricks of the trade. You know, we sat down with like club owners and security and then had a conversation about how often they talk about the act the night before and how, you know, if you're rude to the bouncer, then you're probably not getting booked again. Mm-hmm. Like, how this ecosystem of entertainment works. So that was like the point of the podcast.
You even have an episode where you talk to Jay Sirens and stuff.
Yeah. That's the family. Jay Siren and I go way, way back. She, for those of you who don't know, she is the founder of the Sizzling Sirens burlesque company out here. And when I ran into them in 2013, 2014, their production was more polished and professional and just amazing than anything that I was seeing out here. And me and Jay became really close. And I got to, I think we rubbed off on each other, you know? I think she got a little weirder because I was around, and I encouraged that in people. But I also learned a hell of a lot as far as organizing and you know, layers of legitimacy. Jay was the one who taught me that, layers of legitimacy.
Okay.
So, you know, you stack them on, and the Siren fam and the ZFG fam are always, like, we love each other. We got all kinds of work that we doing upcoming and always.
Okay. So I know you're an educator and stuff, but I did read something that I need to be a little bit more explained. You have a hip-hop based curriculum that was approved by the Common Core Standard. What is it?
So Common Core standards, as far as education goes, there are goals that you have to reach. Like throughout the year, these are certain goals you're trying to, certain things you're trying to teach the kids, ideas they need to walk away with, methods that they need to pick up, tools. So one of the hardest ones, according to my fifth grade teacher friends, was drawing the comparison between art and feeling. Hmm. And being able to interpret like art and words and feeling. And so we have an activation called Chainlink Poetry, where we put words are drawn on cards, and then the cards are decorated for how that word feels. Oh, okay. So if you have the word light, it's got a bunch of light beams or a lighthouse or sunshine, however you decide to portray light. And then all of those words get stuck onto coat hangers. And then the coat hangers link the words onto the chain link fence. Usually schools have a chain link fence or some around the neighborhood there's a chain link fence. We've done a couple public installations of this. So it basically functions as, you know, those magnetic poetry sets that people put on their refrigerators. It becomes a giant one of those for the community, for the school, for the people. So that these kids end up, they can make their own poems, and they're flipping them every day, and they've got, you know, 200 plus words that they're flipping through. And we, you know, we went out to one of the schools that we went to, the kids were worried that, you know, some of the residents or some of the older kids were going to take down their words. So I told them if that happened, I would replace their words, and like we'd make sure that they were taken care of. So we came back on a Saturday after a Friday where we'd left the setup. And when we came back, there was a bunch of the kids from the neighborhood, from the class, who were there playing with the set. And not only were they like making poems, but they were pulling and pointing at words to like rap with.
Okay.
Yo, use this one. Use this one. Use this one. And it was so deep and so dope. Like, so it wasn't built with the idea of meeting this Common Core standard. It just, when I talked to my fifth grade educator friends, they had a couple different ones where like, I'm having trouble with this one standard, and it's about like, how do you portray feeling and words through art? And I'm like, that's funny. I have the perfect exercise for you. And I mean, just my history in education is finding that like hip hop and poetry are two of the most powerful teaching tools that are known to man. When I walk into a class and I start off with a spoken word piece, or they've already heard an album, I already have those kids, you know, in a way that their teacher probably doesn't. You know, so it gets deep as far as this hip hop education goes. And I'm always trying to learn more, and I always learn more from the crew. I hang out with Paul Willis.
Shout out to Paul Willis.
Always.
So basically, has hip hop always been your bread and butter? You live hip hop, whereas you, when you made the beats and stuff, and even you kind of live and breathe hip hop from what, the 90s or 80s version of it?
Yeah, I think so. I try to explain to people, like, it was 1997, I'm in seventh grade. They have those, I forget what, the Columbia House or whatever, the magazines, yeah, where you could just order however much music you want to for a cent.
Columbia House, yeah.
And so I was young. I was in seventh grade, so I can't contractually be held to any of that shit. So I ordered a whole gang of CDs. Like, that was my thing, was I would just get these things, order a whole bunch of them, and then, like, my parents would be like, what are these CDs you're going to have to? And I'd be like, yeah. I'm too young. They can't hold me to that. And among the first of them was Wu-Tang Forever. Okay. And when I popped in disc 2, Triumph, it starts off, Obamatomically, Socrates' philosophies and hypotheses can't define how I'll be dropping these mockeries, lyrically perform on robbery, flee with the lottery, possibly. Like, I could give you that entire song, right? But
back to deck.
when I went to my pops, and I said, who is Socrates and what are his philosophies? My dad didn't know. He didn't have an answer for me. Oh. And at that moment, like I joke about it, but it's like half serious that like I stopped listening to everybody but Wu-Tang. Like Wu-Tang became like smarter than my parents at that point, became smarter. Like these guys were dropping ideas and knowledge that like I didn't have any clue about, but I knew that this is like ancient that they're talking about. Like, so, I mean, the authors that I read, I learned through hip hop. It's all me going back to, oh, who is Socrates and what are his philosophies? The reason I know Socrates is because of Wu-Tang. Like, so hip-hop literally raised me. And then on top of that, as a quote-unquote white kid, because there ain't no Whitelandia, that's why I say quote-unquote, as someone of European descent in America, I don't, like, what is white culture, right? So, I don't have a culture that I ever identified with. You know what I mean? My spirit never identified with what some folks would call white culture.
Right.
But when I found hip-hop culture and it was about your writing, like I'm a writer, so I was good in hip-hop culture. Like I've been pretty good from day one. You know, I didn't dress the part. I was super nerdy. But when it came to my words, like I earned my respect. And that's what I always loved about hip-hop was that like I have some really gangster friends. I have some folks from complete other sides of life that I would have never met had it not been for hip hop. And they had no problem with me because I was authentic and I worked on my craft with these words. And that was the only two prerequisites to be accepted, was like, yo, are you being real? And do you actually like work on your craft? You know? So that's where hip hop really like kind of embraced me and gave me, you know, what I don't have of my own culture.
Right. Cause I mean, I heard both your albums and stuff over the past 2 days and stuff. And songs I like is like Water or Gasoline, Cheater's Anthem. Basically check that out. And so, I mean, you got The Prayer. I mean, it's even from both albums, I can see the evolution of your words in those, and that pushed me to this because I know you have a writer's credit from like four to five different publications. I mean, the News and Review, Sacramento, Comstock, Submerge. I mean, you're a writer.
Yeah. I do words. Like, you know, I joke with people all the time that they tried to put me in algebra for 4 years. I failed out 4 years. Not because I'm stupid, but because my brain the entire time was like, you're a writer. You don't need this. Like, I knew from jump that I was going to be a writer and that was who I am. It doesn't matter what it is. I used to, when I first started a rap career, right, like you got to supplement a rap career. So I used to hire myself out on Craigslist at whatever you need written, company content, you need web content, you need articles, you need press releases, you need whatever. One of the biggest mentors that I met early on hired me to write white papers. He said, can you write my company's white papers? I said, absolutely, sir. I'll write the best white papers you've ever read in your life. And then I had to go home and Google what white papers were. But I knew that I could write it because if it has words, I can write it. Once we get to the design and you need it to look pretty, like I might have to call a friend or two, you know. But if it's just the words, like that's what I do. That's what I was put on this planet to do, is words.
Well, most definitely. So if we're going to now get into the part about the Poet Laureate. Since you're now, congratulations, sir, for being the new 2020 Poet Laureate.
Thank you.
I mean, even the year itself says it. Open your eyes, people. It's 2020. How does it feel being Poet Laureate?
Man, it's a super honor. It's just a super honor. You know, it's something that I've wanted my entire life. So I'll just be straight about that. But it's wild. It's really wild. I tell people that it feels like everything changed and nothing changed. Cause I feel like I've been doing this work. I don't like when I look at what I'm supposed to do as Poet Laureate and what's expected of me, it's on the same trajectory, you know, as everything that I've been doing. It's not like I'm adding anything to my list of things to do, you know. But just the unique opportunity to bring this community together. I think there's some really cool opportunities to bring intergenerational poets together. I'm the youngest Sacramento poet laureate that's ever been, and I do work really closely with the youth, and I look forward to working with the older generation because I know they got a lot to teach me. So, you know, I'm real excited, man. I'm real excited, and we're gonna get a little bit guerrilla with it. We're gonna take it to the streets a little bit, and do it in a little unconventionally. So I'm excited about all of that. But it's always for the people, and it's just a huge honor, man. I feel like you know, I had a couple homies that hit me and were like, "We won," and to know that like that's how the community feels, that like we won, that's big shit for me, you know. Like, I feel like there's a lot of folks who feel like we won as a community with this, so that's always feels good.
So so speaking back, are you still selling illicit?
Nah. Every once in a while, like illicit pops up in like a random dive bar bathroom, or you know, like it'll get left around. Copies get left around. This city, I may make another printing of it. The whole thing with illicit was I wanted to just make enough to print a bunch of them and put them in the little baggies and just leave them around. So there's like hundreds of copies of that just got left at random dives around Sacramento or random places for people to find and be like, "What the hell is this?" Like, it's poetry. Yeah, I think I'll probably do another reprint of that. What's sad is that I had so much of illicit too on my phone, and like they was, because they're those illicit's a really short poem series. Like all the poems are pretty short, so a lot of times those poems just come in like a flash, and so those were a lot of what was on my phone when it got stolen. So I lost that phone with a year and a half's worth of poems right before, it was the week, 2 weeks before the Poet Laureate Finals. And so, yeah, I gotta see what I still got as far as Illicit 2 goes. But I'm sure, I mean, those come all the time. I love that series because it is just little random thoughts, little things that I think are funny and then put into poem form. And then get to wad up and throw at the audience.
So people don't know, he has this one poem basically where he talks about motherfucker.
It's not explicitly about motherfuckers. It's about the words fuck and shit.
And talk about what the poem really explains.
Man, so that's probably one of the most requested pieces that I get. And the poem is basically a really long, well-written.
Yes.
Just kind of exploration of the ways that the words fuck and shit can be used, because all the time when I go in to teach poetry, one of the first questions that they ask me is, "Do you use bad words?" And I don't believe in bad words. I believe in bad people far more than I believe in bad words. So explaining to youth, especially when these are words that they hear all the time, right? Explaining to them that there are uses for these words. Like, these are magical words. There is no word like fuck to put an exclamation on something, but you cannot do it frivolously, especially in your writing. It's an atom bomb. You don't drop atom bombs every, right? So that kind of starts. That's like my point to them, and then the point to the educators at the end of the poem is that they're so worried about the words fuck and shit being used, but they're, you know, there are entire systems that are built up against these kids that are way bigger than the words fuck and shit. You know what I mean? We're talking about police brutality. We're talking about the school to prison pipeline, you know, that they're currently sitting in the school to prison pipeline and trying to express their frustration in being caught in this system. And you're so worried about them using the words fuck and shit. Well, that's some fucking bullshit. So, and there's not a, that's how it ends, is there's not a better way to say fuck that shit than saying fuck that shit, as long as you know what the shit is, who's responsible for it, and how you intend to fuck it.
A lot of fucking shit.
That's it. But I think just demystifying these words, and you know, the reason that kids say these words is because y'all tell them that they're bad words and they shouldn't say them. If y'all stopped doing all of that and putting all this extra on it, then we wouldn't have this problem. You know what I mean? Like, and then the focus is just, it's a little bit off sometimes. I think we, as grown folks, like, we forget the realities that these kids are facing. Like, some of the fucking shit that these kids are facing is so much bigger than we were even equipped to deal with, as far as having the internet and all of this involved now becomes this universal thing. Like, so, you know, I think we really need to get clear on where we pick our battles. So yeah, the fuck shit poem was just a really fun way of razzing the educators a little bit, and then also having some fun with language, because, you know, if you ever get a chance to hear that poem, you'll see how diverse those words actually are. Like, we're talking about, like, all five senses can see, taste, hear, smell, feel, like, yeah. Shit, you know, like, yeah, it's incredible.
But so we always got, so there's always been a thing in the poetry community and stuff, which is the literary poet who basically is the one that basically writes all their stuff in the book, poems in a book, and then, excuse me, the stage poet who is going to go on stage and bring it to him. Well, we mostly call that the page versus the stage. And since you're kind of, and you're well equipped in both, do you like the page, the stage, or both?
I'm constantly working on getting better on the page.
Oh, okay.
'Cause the page is not that's not my natural habitat. That's something that really with Illicit kind of began to take shape, where it was like, yo, these poems look really good on a page. And that's not something that I come from oral traditions. I come from spoken word. And I think ancestrally, I come from spoken oral traditions. So I enjoy the stage. I enjoy the stage more because there's connection. I can tell whether someone is feeling it or not in that moment. If I write something on a page, I may never know, right? Like, someone will take your book, they will read it, they could even have a whole epiphany based on one of your pieces, and they won't send you an email to tell you, right? Like, you don't feel that connect. So for me, like, a lot of this is about connection. And I think part of that, again, comes from that, like, borrowed time, right? I want to be as connected and feel as much love as I possibly can before I check out of here, right? Like,
gratification.
You know? So, yeah, I think that's why I like the stage a little bit more. And that part of it, I need to, like, wipe my brain clear to be able to memorize more. Okay. Like, I feel like my memory, like, you know, when your computer's like, you are almost full.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, you know, a few albums and a few poems and a few, like, I need to figure out how to create a little more space for this new stuff that I'm going to come up with. But yeah, I'm definitely like a stage person. Over the page right now, but again, trying to get better at it. I'm looking for all kinds of mentors as far as getting better on the page. So if you get on the page, let me know.
Most definitely. So let's go into what you got going on in March, or what's going on further now. I mean, being the poet laureate you are now.
Well, as the laureate, I will be purchasing my monocle and my cape. no. Let's see. So the first, one of the first things that I get to do, I'm still working on it, scheduling the exact time out, but one of the first things that I get to do, which is exciting for me, is I'm going back to the continuation school that I graduated from, and I'm gonna go celebrate with those kids, and I'm gonna do it up real big, and I'm gonna let them know how big that they can be, and that they should not stop dreaming just because these people told you that you belonged over here and you didn't belong over here. So that's huge for me. So that's giving me a lot of joy. That's where I'm really focused right now. I am going to be guesting at a slam at the Sacramento Poetry Center. I am currently working on National Guerrilla Poetry Month, which is in April. And so we have done this for years now. I think it started in 2014, where we shoot poets out in public, interrupting the mundane with their poetry. And we've had some pretty incredible folks and some pretty incredible results in the past from this. So I'm always excited to see where it's going to go. One year we got shared by the U.S. Embassy in Ghana. We got shouted out by William DeVault, who's the creator of AOL Poetry Place. Nice. Yeah, like it's gone some really wild places. Jared Paul joined up with us a couple years ago, and he submitted a piece. We had someone submit from Mexico City while they were like putting stickers up on the train, which was, yeah, that was dope. So yeah, that should be a lot of fun, and I think this year it'll be cool to see how much support we can garner around the city with this little bit of like, so I'm not just Andrew doing this, I'm also the poet laureate, so what's up? You know, so we're hoping to just kind of push that forward a little bit, and that's kind of like where I'm sitting at right now. I know there's still like a little bit of contract stuff. I signed the contract, but then the city council has to look at it, and Jody has to look at it, and there's some bureaucracy stuff that like T's to cross and I's to dot. But yeah, I think Guerrilla Poetry Month is like my main focus right now, and then I'm working right now. This is important. I'm working right now to create points of contact, poets of contact in every district. So as poet laureate, like I want to help create the programs around poetry and help support the programs around poetry that would best fit each community, right? Like, and I'm not in Del Paso Heights like that. So I can't say what's best for that community or which one of these programs, or if you got a new idea for a program, if you have a better idea, I'm not the best poet in this city, and I'm not the best ideas in this city. So I'm definitely trying to reach out to all of the poets that are in districts throughout the city to get in touch, just so we can stay in contact about what's happening with poetry in your district. If there isn't enough of it, yo, we need an open mic. Yo, we need a place for the kids to get down. Yo, we need a weekend thing. Yo, we need whatever y'all need. Like that's the part of the poet laureate that I'm trying to be. The performances and doing stuff like that, like that's really cool, and it's a great opportunity. But being able to like really interface with the entirety of Sacramento and figure out how we serve y'all with this poetry and how we make sure that there's a space for everyone in this poetry and with this poetry, that's the big thing on my plate right now. Because that'll make everything else easier. The elder always says, you got to organize and centralize. And I'm not trying to get yelled at the next time he comes down. You know?
I know when, I think it was 2018, I did one of the guerrilla poems, and I did it in front of the county jail.
Californication, welcome to my nation where there's more than palm trees and Disney vacations. It's amazing. Who keeps fame out of reach? Because hustlers out here still hustle on the beat. Life isn't cheap. Lowering the price contemplates what I eat.
Yeah,
I'm not a crook, and I did it right in front of the doorway, and just basically just went out, had my video camera set it up. People walking by just hearing me going, I'm not a crook. Can you believe that? And then people just Like, okay, that's new. I think I put it out, and I was just like, that is, I wasn't gonna lie, I was scared.
I was just gonna say, how'd it feel?
I was like, I was waiting for someone to pull me over and go, you know, you can't be here. But I just, it was like, they're just gonna let me do it. All right, cool. I'll finish this whole thing up.
Two questions. Answer. How did it feel before, and then how did it feel after?
Okay, so before, I ain't gonna lie, when I put the thing up and people just looked at me doing it, I thought in my head, oh, they're gonna grab me. I'm in the wrong position, mm-hmm. but you know what? Mm-hmm. It's gonna happen. I'm gonna finish this thing, and they'll take me away as I'm going out. I'm not a crook.
right.
And then when it was over, I ain't gonna lie, I grabbed my stuff and ran out the door, ran over to the train and jumped on it. It's like, ooh, I got away with it. It's like, I know they saw me. That's a 3-minute thing. It takes a long time to finish this thing. I'm even doing all the opera parts and stuff. And then I was like, okay, that's new. Okay, cool. I thought it was a relief, but it was also exciting.
Some adrenaline off of poetry.
Yeah. But, you know, I never think about it. I seen people come in and out, but it wasn't like cops were coming in and out. It wasn't like I was next to the garage where they actually come out and they're doing the poem right there going, yeah, you better take me now.
Right. Well, I'm like, it's funny with guerrilla poetry too, because I always tell people when we do our official videos with the videographer, when we've done them, I tell people that you have to keep going.
Right.
Because if they try and shut you down, that makes the video even better.
Yeah.
So if you, like, there can't be, like, you can't back down to it. Otherwise, it's not guerrilla.
Right.
Like, you have to, like, finish off your piece, right? There's an infamous one where Russell is in Safeway, and we were filming the Michelle Obama piece, and the security guard comes up, and he's like, yo, you guys can't be filming in here. And Russ is like, but it's for the children. It's for the Obama campaign. It's for the Obamas. Like, and he's just like going in, like, please just let it. And the security guard was like, all right, I'm gonna take a one walk around this store. If y'all ain't out of here by the time I get back, like, because they want to see it too. They're excited by it too. You know, we've never really, I think that's probably the most close to trouble we've ever gotten in, you know what I mean, as far as filming Guerrilla Poetry Month stuff. And Cap's performance in the shopping cart going through Seafood City, one of our most legendary ones, but it was so.
Two cap, bottle cap, captain, cap, CAP, that is me from my tonsils to my undies. I'm a short, starving student, barely standing 5 feet, sizzling like Hot Pockets, slick and lisping, new kind of sexy, hot piece of stunning.
It was so fast that by the time that we, like, it was like, yo, you're going to perform this in the shopping cart going through an aisle. Like, okay, we only got one shot to do this, right? We all understand there's like only one shot. And if they stop us, then we got to get out of here. You know what I mean? So yeah, there's been some wild ones. Russell Cummings is known for some of the most guerrilla performances as far as Guerrilla Poetry Month goes. His performance in the Tower Cafe was one of the more well-orchestrated ones I've ever seen. We had a whole team that ran interference on the door people.
And they surviving in the cracks, feasting off of scraps, grind all day to find a meal, bring it back. The little ants how they march. You won't believe it when you see it, how hard they try for the system, how they risk their lives for the system. But they just little ants, who cares if they die for the system? The little ants how they march. And the little ants are making more little ants, so the little ants die, but the system stay alive.
In order to get the camera in there first and then get Russ in there. It was such a well-orchestrated plan in the middle of like Sunday lunch that like Russ went in and did his poem. And then it was so good that the audience asked to hear it again because they didn't hear him start, so he did it a second time. So Russ is for sure like one of the most gorillas out there. I think Ann holds the spot right now because that video was wild. When they said, "Yo, I want to get in the shopping cart and I'm gonna have him push me," like, stroke of genius, guys, stroke of genius. I'm very proud. So yeah, we're trying to top that this year. I don't know who's doing what, but we're going to see. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I just encourage everybody to come out and get involved. Like, whether you got a professional photographer or videographer, or whether it's just you and your phone and you doing it selfie style. Like, I never meant for people to get intimidated by the videos that we put out. A lot of us work in media, right? So it's not, you know, out of our realm to put something like that together, where I just wanted this to be like, every poet in the entire world goes out and yells the poem that they feel the most on the street corner that they live on, right? Like, it's not even meant to be the most gorilla, let's go bug security. And, you know, it's not always about that. It's generally not about that. It's only about that when we get a little itch, when I have a little extra fun.
Most definitely. I mean, I got people that give you shout outs on the podcast. Jeanette gives you a shout out for doing the iconic when she did become an iconic show. And then also Anya's gives you shout outs. And also Paulus. I even got Paulus. I never seen a man so mad that so many people were trying to hate on you when you got it. He is like your follower. I was like, try to hate on him.
Man,
I'll have
man,
his back.
Let me stop you right there, because that's definitely, I wouldn't call Paul a follower in any capacity. I would call Paul like, that's my literal right hand man. You know, we always talk around here, if you know me for 5 minutes, you understand that I don't do meetings. I don't like meetings. I feel like meetings could be emails. And again, I have super social anxiety. And Paul is that face for ZFG. Paul is the person that I've always gone to, you know, I'm a very emotional person. Paul is my check. Like, if I say, Paul, oh bro, I feel like this shit got me feeling like this. I don't know, bro. Paul's the one to be like, hey, take a couple deep breaths and you need to think about this. You ain't looking at this from everybody's perspective. You're not, you know what I mean? Like, that's my real life brother right there. And we fight like it too. That's why I love Paul. I ain't never come as close to boxing one of my homies in my grown days as Paul Willis. And he knows it. And he knows I love him. he'll tell you the same thing. And then, you know, Jeanette, like, that's little sis right there. Like, these, it really is family, you know? Like, I can't reiterate it enough and I can't explain it enough. Like, the levels that I love these people and what they've really helped me get through and to. I remember seeing Jeanette just jump up on the C-man at the intersection, just this light ball of energy. She performed. I said, who is this person? Okay, so I keep an eye out. And then I went to her feature at Speak Out back when it was at Shine. And it was funny because I was outside. People think that I'd just be outside ignoring everyone, but I'm tuned in to everything and just avoiding the social side of it, right? And so I just see the energy that she's performing with. I'm not watching her, I'm watching the audience, and I'm seeing how they're reacting. I was like, Jesus, who is this person? Like, and then it just worked out where I got asked to do the Democratic National Convention with this guerrilla poetry stuff, and I needed a team. And I was looking around and I was like, okay, the universe just said, this is the girl that you need to holler at. So it was me, Grace, Jeanette, David, Callie, Fada, and Danielle Chavon that went out there. But yeah, like, so when you talk about like some of these people, like me and Jeanette been in trenches together as far as this poetry stuff goes. I've been in that Democratic National Convention. I dare any poet on the planet to go stand in those shoes and go stand in the middle of this conference with these people walking by, and you trying to yell your poetry loud enough for them to stop and listen while they're politicking for their candidate and they're all yelling and cheering, this guy, that guy. That's all they're doing. They just run into each other and then start chanting. It's the wildest, most like caveman shit I've ever seen in my life. I didn't like, it was such an energy vacuum to even be around that kind of like just blind political following, you know. It was very interesting. And I think and then you're talking about folks doing their deepest pieces, so they're pulling their traumas out over and over and over and over again. We're doing this 8 times a day at points. Like, it was wild. So, you know, there's a whole gang of folks who have a Speak Poet tattoo on them, and that's because we were in the trenches together and we learned how to speak together through those trenches. Love those people. Don't get me talking about my friends. I'll do an hour and a half just on how dope my friends are.
And so I'd like to come, we're getting close to the end stuff, but I'd like to give you the floor and say, since being the new Polaroid, what do you want to tell the people out there that you want to inspire them, what you want to let them know that how you're doing it, or it don't have to be how you're doing it, but how.
Word. It's a really nice title. It's a really nice title, and I'm really honored. And I'm going to do everything I can to honor the groundwork that's been done in this city and the work that's been done by some amazing poets to build what currently exists. I want to push things forward. And I just want everybody to know, like, I'm not the best poet in the city. I don't look at myself as the best poet in the city. There is no ego attached to this. I got so much to learn from all of y'all, and especially, you know, the elders. So, you know, feel free to reach out to me. I'm just a person. I love this poetry. I love this art form, and I love this city, and I've given everything that I have to them. So, you know.
And where can they find your social media at?
You can find me on Facebook at Andrew Defeye, AndruDefeye. You can find me on Instagram at The Real Defeye. I don't fuck with Twitter, so don't find me there. I think I'm on it, but I don't actually like engage. I really only got a Twitter so that I could tweet Drake random YOLO County stuff. Nice. It's a weird, I don't know. Twitter's fucking weird. But yeah, you can reach out. And then I'm at Andrew, A-N-D-R-U at gorillapoet.com. You can email me any kind of inquiries or booking stuff, or, you know, you got an idea to get something cracking in your neighborhood, or you want to be a poet of contact, or whatever, reach out. I'm a person. Talk to me. I talk back.
Most definitely. Yeah. Get a hold of Andrew, the new poet laureate. I'd like to give a thanks for him to be on the show. Thanks, Andrew, for being here and stuff, man. And also like to let people know that Iambic is on every single streaming service you want.
Every single streaming service.
So if all you gotta do is to find that your streaming service that you like prefer, just go to www.linktr.ee/iambiczine. That's IAMBICZINE.
Hit that link tree. They got all the links for you. All the links. On everything.
So most definitely, get on there and check everything out you can. This is Sharon. Here, thank you to Andrew for coming out, man. And peace journey, man.
Blah. Blah.